DC sports fans start their day with 106.7 The Fan's Sports Junkies.
Let Jaden cook.
With Commanders Talk.
They were 60 minutes away from the Super Bowl last year, and they're better this year.
And a lot of fun.
You're acting like I haven't been embarrassed in my life before. Right.
Every morning from 6 to 10.
I thought I handled myself with incredible maturity.
If you missed it live, listen to 106.7 The Fan's Sports Junkies on Apple Podcasts, Spotify.
They're listening to everything you do.
Or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Bullseye Saints Hour. Bullseye, the official tailgate of the New Orleans Saints. Mike Hoss, along with Executive Vice President and General Manager Mickey Loomis. We elongate the 24-hour rule a little bit for this show because it's on Tuesday. Mm-hmm. You've had a couple of days. In the end, it's always judged in W's and L's, but you've had a couple of days. Give me your takeaways from game one.
Yeah, look, like you know, any time that you have a game, there's you walk away obviously feeling badly about the loss, but I also came away kind of encouraged, encouraged about a lot of things. You know, we had a lot of new players, moving parts, new staff, and there were some good things. You know, I thought we moved the ball pretty well. I thought we played really good defense, particularly in the second half. We had a couple of explosive plays that got away from us in the first half, led to points for them. And, you know, we had some good things that have happened that didn't lead to points for us. You know, we were one for four in the red zone, really kind of one for five, because I think we had another possession that was right at the 20. And, you know, you have to be able to score touchdowns, preferably at about a 75% clip at least, but you can't be at 25% or 20%. And so, I think that's the take. You know, I thought Spencer did some really good things, and I thought, you know, that the offensive line with a lot of moving parts there, new parts, did some good things, and yet there was just, you know, the one play, one or two plays that would have made the difference in terms of the outcome of the game.
Yeah, the red zone's a unique stat. You can get away with it sometimes if your defense is keeping them at 25%, but they were 67% in the red zone and two for two goal to go. So that you're right. I mean, it's that stat can tell a lot.
Yeah, it can tell. It does tell a lot, you know, each week, because you're going to get 10 possessions. And, you know, if you can get down at least in the scoring area on five or six of those, you're going to have a good chance to win, but not if the five or six are field goals and not touchdowns. And so I think that was kind of the story. If you looked around the league, outside of that Buffalo-Baltimore game, the scoring was, you know, there was a lot of 10 points, 13 points. 18 points, 17 points, you know, a lot of games like that. And I think that's a product really of the way teams practice and play in the preseason. You know, you're getting less reps, and oftentimes at the early part of the season, the offense is behind.
It also doesn't surprise me that some crews, and I'm not going to ask you to talk about the officiating, but called it tight, like beginning of the season. Hey, we're going to call this tight. But that is an area, certainly, 13 and 89, from any team has to get cleaned up.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got, listen, a lot of those were self-inflicted, pre-snap penalties, and that's all on us. We have to get that corrected, and we will.
Spencer, you talked about it, 27-46, 214, only the one sack, no picks, very efficient, smart with the football, ran the offense, and really, man, ran an up-tempo offense almost the whole game. That was impressive. I would assume you're not wanting him thrown at 46 times in a game every week.
Like, no, that's not an assumption. That's a fact.
Okay.
we don't really want him to throw it 46 times. You know, again, I think when you look back at it and you just review the game, yeah, we had five sacks. That was really good. We had a lot of pressure on the quarterback, and we only gave up one sack. I thought Spencer manipulated and moved around the pocket in a good fashion that kept us from having sacks. I thought the O-line did a really good job of protection. Obviously, you know, you want no turnovers, but we want takeaways, and we didn't get those. We had I thought, a couple of, you know, opportunities that maybe to get a turnover, but it didn't happen. But again, they, you know, listen, let's give them credit. They made some plays when it counted and won the game.
I bet I was asked 15 times in the offseason, man, has Alvin turned 30? Has he lost a step? Has he lost a step? And I kept saying, no, man. If you saw practice in Metairie, for answers, no. If you saw California, no. If you saw anything, I mean, he's – and I guess to me, he was never this elusive burner from the 40, right? But it was just he's got this way of zigging when you zag and that tiptoeing down the sideline. I mean, he looks as strong and as fast and as smart as he did, you know, 4 years ago.
Yeah, you know, I would agree with that. I think, you know, his superpower is balance, and he runs really hard. He's a really, really smart player. And, you know, to his credit, he pays close attention to his body, his physical condition. He has an off-season program that he does, an individualized off-season program that he does that I don't think many guys could keep up with. That's a credit to him, and obviously we need him to be at his best, and I think that he is.
His touchdown was the 1,000th in Caesars Superdome as we celebrate our 50th anniversary. I don't know who found that stat. Amazing in and of itself, from the line of scrimmage up, you know, regular season and postseason. A lot of guys played a role in that, but it's kind of cool that Alvin is the guy that did it.
Yeah, it's... it's really a cool stat, and I, you know, it speaks to a lot of things. Obviously, you know, the players and the coaches that have designed those plays and executed those plays to score touchdowns, but it's also a product of a lot of great work by a lot of people in this state and with the team who have kept the Superdome relevant. And, you know, it's a fabulous stadium. It's still a fabulous stadium. It's been kept up to date with the renovations that have been done over the years. And it's real credit when you look around and you see places that have gone through three stadiums. That's not very efficient. Let me give the credit to my predecessors and the owners and of the team and the state and local officials who have kept the Superdome relevant and done really right by the taxpayers of Louisiana.
It's the Bullseye Saints Hour, back with more here on the New Orleans Saints Radio Network.
D.C. sports fans start their day with 106.7 The Fan's Sports Junkies.
Let Jaden cook.
With Commanders Talk.
They were 60 minutes away from the Super Bowl last year, and they're better this year.
And a lot of fun.
You're acting like I haven't been embarrassed in my life before.
Right. Every morning from 6 to 10.
I thought I handled myself with incredible maturity.
If you missed it live, listen to 106.7 The Fan's Sports Junkies on Apple Podcasts, Spotify.
They're listening to everything you do.
Or wherever you get your podcasts.
Back with the Bullseye Saints Hour, Mike Hoss, along with Saints Executive Vice President and General Manager Mickey Loomis. I want to go backwards a little bit. Training camp in Metairie started here, then Irvine, then the two home games, the pop-up practice, or joint practice with the Rams, invaluable. Felt like training camp, you know, couldn't have gone much better. Now, we only had one, like, 10-minute spat of rain in Metairie, and we didn't have any lightning. We didn't get forced inside. I mean, somebody told Kellen that this is not how it always is, right? But that things went, I mean, you know, there's always some injuries, but nothing like last year.
Yeah, well, you know, a couple things there. I agree. Kellen didn't get the real August of Louisiana, late July, August of Louisiana. That was really good. We didn't have to adjourn practice and go inside, not a single time. You know, the goal was going to California was A, to get out of the heat, and B, to get a couple practices in with originally the Chargers. It ended up being the Rams. That's really good work for us, especially, you know, when you've got a lot of new young players and new players to the team. That was really good for us. look, I think our injury rate has been down, and that's a credit to, you know, it's credit to Ted Rath and the strength and conditioning coaches, our trainers. They've ramped up our sports performance and analytics in order to try to get a handle on the injuries that we've had over the last few years. A lot of it is a product of, you know, dehydration and the heat and the circumstances that we have to deal with here. But we've got to adjust to that because that's not going to go away in the future. And we do need to conduct you know, a good portion of our training camp here in New Orleans. So it was pretty good from that respect.
Roster moves. You made Fidel Diggs, your seventh round pick, active for Sunday today. Jack Stoll to the active roster, and then re-signed Hunter and Jake, both quarterbacks, to the practice squad. I mean, the Jack situation, because of the pup with Foster and Taysom, it almost felt like if you didn't do that, you were gonna have to get, you know, unless you alternated tight ends bringing them up.
Yeah, those are just, you know, we're just manipulating and managing the roster, and we have, you know, we have tools to do that. We have the practice squad, and we have elevations off the practice squad, and we used a couple of those this week. You only get two per week, so we have to be a little bit judicious on how we use it. And we also don't want to use, for each player, they have a 3 elevation max. And so we have to, you know, pay attention to making sure we have some of those in our pocket for later in the season. So we're just managing the roster.
I wanted to talk about the end of the preseason. Typically, it's what we see. You pick up a player, you're always getting better, always getting better. And maybe he's an active roster, but more times than not, maybe he's a practice squad. But this year, it was, you know, like baseball for a while, right? Right after Jacksonville, Luke Fortner for Colin Saunders. Now, you'd already had Will Clapp and Nick Salivary, so that move, even though it happened right after the game, had been in the books, right? But you've been looking at it.
Yeah, well, you know, some of that's a product of players that we really had an eye out for over the course of the preseason, and some of it's a product of injuries. You know, we had some injuries in the offensive line kind of in the mid to late end of training camp, and so we had to address that. I think, spent the entire offseason trying to bolster and improve our receiving group. We got a lot of receivers we like on the roster, but yeah, we wanted to add to that in terms of just different skill sets. So, you know, you're always looking, and sometimes there's years where, you know, a player didn't come free at the position you're looking for, or somebody in particular that you like that you think might come free doesn't. Sometimes there's trades available, and sometimes there aren't. And I felt like this year there was a lot of teams that were maneuvering their rosters around. And some, you know, if you have a strength at a particular position, you know, it gives you some assets to bolster an area of your roster that maybe isn't as strong.
And same kind of thing with Devon Vele pre-Denver. You get a 6'5 guy, you get Awesome Richards. These are all trades. I guess that was the kind of the difference of this picking up a guy that might have been on the waivers. But you did also, do you call it that you were awarded Trey Palmer, or you claimed Trey Palmer?
Good question. Yeah. What happens is that you make these claims, right? And you're awarded based upon your priority on the list. And so if a number of teams are claiming a player, then obviously it goes to the priority list, which is determined at the first cut by the draft order.
Right.
And so, yes, we were awarded Trey Palmer.
And Xavier Truss.
And
well.
Xavier Truss, yes. Devon was an interesting deal for us because we had kind of had our eye on him from the very beginning. You know, months ago, we talked about, you know, players that might be available. We knew he was never getting cut. He was a really good player for Denver, but they had a lot of receivers that they liked, and a number of guys that had the size and skill set that Devon has. So, obviously, we have a relationship with the Denver people.
Yeah, but it's always felt like the other way around. You know what I mean?
Yeah, sometimes that's worked that way. But in this case, you know, we talked to him a lot about Devon, and I know that he didn't really want to trade him, but when you have an abundance at a position, sometimes you kind of forces your hand if you get the right offer.
And you really kind of want to see, because you know, Austin Richards was. He was signed on 8/26. He was forced into action, right? He's playing, yeah. Right? Devon played. And, you know, 4 weeks from now, maybe there are plays. I mean, he's your red zone guy. He got 3 touchdowns in the red zone last year, 41 touches, 41 catches, 26 of them were first downs. You know, these guys really have not had a whole lot of time with your team.
No, they haven't. And yet they were called into action, you know, week one. That, and look, that will improve as the season goes on, as they get acclimated to our offense and our schemes and our coaches get acclimated to them. So that will improve. But again, there's two young players that have experience at positions that you know we felt we needed.
Take another quick break. This is the Saints Hour, brought to you by Bullseye, the official tailgate of the New Orleans Saints, here on the New Orleans Saints Radio Network. And we are back with Mickey Loomis, Vice President and General Manager of the New Orleans Saints. This is the Saints Hour, brought to you by Bullseye. Last week, he had a press conference to Ron Armstead. He was also the legend of the game. And I don't know that I've ever witnessed many press conferences like that. His family was here. It was emotional. He's a brilliant speaker and typically of what this team has always looked for, quality of the man, locker room guys. I know Mrs. Benson and you were in, and Dennis were in there for a little bit. I mean, that was something.
Yeah, it was. It really is. Now, first of all, let's start off with Teron's really something.
Yes.
He's a spectacular player for us. And, you know, if you just looked at his performance over his career, just simple facts, right? The amount of sacks and pressures that he's given up, it's in the same company as guys that are in the Hall of Fame. And but he's an understated individual at times. And sometimes it's hard for offensive linemen to get noticed, especially when you're a smaller market team. And yet, he's just a spectacular player. And one thing that I don't think people really realize how tough he was, and how many times he went out there when a lot of other players wouldn't or couldn't. I think he made reference to it in the last few years of his career. There, he was basically out there on one leg with very minimal amount of practice. I know that was the case in Miami and. And really was probably the case here his last year and a half. Boy, you just can't say enough about the type of person he is. You know, on the field, he's smart, he's tough, he's selfless. He's a guy that is a multiplier. He makes everyone around him better, and he always did. And he's, I just can't say enough good things about it. I love that he... cherished and valued his time with the Saints. Love that he had a love affair with the city, and that he wanted to come back and participate and kind of acknowledge all of that, because he really he retired and announced his retirement, had a retirement party earlier in the year, off of his Dolphins experience. So that part was really special.
Two more quick questions. And it does begin with Teron, and that is, you got him in 2013. Now, the ability in the FCS in 2013 is different now. Because there are FCS guys all over the place. I mean, North Dakota, South Dakota, you name it, but back then, it was not as prevalent. But the difference is that the Saints don't find those guys. They look for those guys.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. I remember, when Jeff Ireland was first, we first hired him, we talked a lot about, where players come from and just what the numbers look like. And, he had done a lot of studies about offensive linemen and found that the overwhelming majority were these Power Five players, and that, spending a lot of time at the smaller colleges, at the smaller schools, looking for those guys wasn't an efficient use of time. And yet, I had And we had this experience of Jari Evans from Bloomsburg and Jamon Bushrod from Towson State. And so I was kind of in the other category of, man, I like looking for these guys that are dominant players at their level and, you know, bring him on board. First of all, you know, generally that's going to be a mid to later round pick. And so you're getting some value and good swings at guys that you might hit home runs with. You know, Teron, in his case, that was he was championed by, you know, a couple of our scouts, Mike Bobby and one of them. This guy out of Arkansas Pine Bluff. And I remember talking about him early in the process and Mike talking about him and, hey, this guy is, man, he's a gem. He's going to be a steal when we take him, which we're thinking about as being a sixth or seventh round pick. And then Teron gets invited to the combine and runs like 4.6 something as an offensive lineman, and he does 31 reps on the bench, and he jumps 34 inches. And just out of the world numbers for a 300-pound offensive lineman. And so, well, he's not a secret anymore. We ended up taking him in the third round, but that was still a steal because he took over, you know, one of the starting positions late in his first year, and then we just never worried about it for the next, you know, basically 8 or 9 years.
And finally, it was your first look in a regular season of the Brandon Staley defense. I'm not sure what it is you're looking for, but just overall, you know, you take out those two plays, they had 179 yards of offense. And you don't get to take out those two plays, but your thoughts about this defense?
Yeah, I thought it was good, you know, for a change in scheme for us. And you know, we have some returning players on defense, and, you know, DeMario and Cam and Pete and guys that this, you know, what they're being asked to do is a little different. And I thought that, yeah, for a first game, went really well against you know, a good offense, and I would say that was a good performance, a winning type performance by the defense. But we didn't win, so, you know, it's not a winning performance, obviously. But there was a lot of good things. We got to clean up a few things, some mental errors, and a few of the penalties that happened. Some of them were circumstantial. And then, obviously, you know, you can't have explosive plays. It's going to get you beat in a tight game.
Best of luck against San Francisco. Appreciate your time.
Thank you. Thank you, Mike.
D.C. sports fans start their day with 106.7 The Fan's Sports Junkies.
Let Jaden cook.
With Commanders Talk.
They were 60 minutes away from the Super Bowl last year, and they're better this year.
And a lot of fun.
You're acting like I haven't been embarrassed in my life before.
Right. Every morning from 6 to 10.
I thought I handled myself with incredible maturity.
If you missed it live, listen to 106.7 The Fan's Sports Junkies on Apple Podcasts, Spotify.
They're listening to everything you do.
Or wherever you get your podcasts.